Good evening, Boston. Welcome to BNN News. I'm Faith Mafedon. Thanks for tuning in. Over the weekend, the Easter Bunny hopped down Washington Street to Nubian Square, where Roxbury families enjoyed a day filled with Easter egg surprises.
In Nubian Square, Easter excitement reached its peak at the Easter Extravaganza Party, hosted by Roxbury Main Streets. Children of all ages rocked to the rhythm, their faces lit up with joy as they cracked open the vibrantly colored eggs filled with Easter surprises.
We have so many beautiful neighborhood children here. We like to celebrate the meaning of Easter, the meaning of reading, of playing together, of sharing, and of knowing that they have something in their own neighborhood that they can come to.
I think celebrations like this are important. The Easter Extravaganza is one event. There's the holiday party that happens every December. But it's important to bring community together. Nubian Square is kind of a hub of the Roxbury community, so that's why Roxbury Main Streets is hosting this event. But it's important to really celebrate, bring community together intergenerationally, so of all ages. And it gives young people something to feel like the community, the commercial district, is also a part of their home.
Kids enjoyed story time, face painting, Easter Bunny visits, and more, creating memories they may not have been able to have otherwise.
Traditions are passed down from generation to the next. You know, we all are here for a short period of time, so we want the ones that are coming after us, our youth and our kids, to keep up these events like this. You know, the Easter tradition, you know, Christmas traditions, all these things that we enjoyed as kids, we need to, you know, keep these up with them so they can, pass it on to their generations.
The tradition of Easter is partly about community and building community and giving thanks and celebrating each other. And so the purpose of the annual Easter egg roll is to bring children of our community together so that they can understand, explore, and celebrate the tradition of Easter through community.
Families in Roxbury savored the community celebration, and Roxbury Main Streets made it their goal to bring the spirit of Easter to everyone who attended.
Last week, a Hindu religious celebration brought joy in Roslindale. BNN correspondent Aditya Iyer joined festivities and spoke with some of the people who were there.
I'm here in Adams Park in Roslindale, where over 4,000 people registered to celebrate Holi, the Hindu festival of colors signifying the beginning of spring. As you can see behind me, there are people smiling, dancing, and throwing around colorful powder.
Everyone's friendly, celebrating Holi. They're throwing colors at each other. Nobody's getting upset. It's just a good time to be had by everyone.
John Paul Sidner, a professor of religion at Emmanuel College, talks about the history of Holi.
It started out as a harvest festival. Also, it started out as a fun time when people left their houses after the winter or the rainy season, and they just wanted to have a party together and be playful again. And I think that combination of the harvest festival plus this day of play to celebrate getting out of their homes became Holi.
J.J. Shishapal, a participant who grew up in India, talks about how this event differed from celebrations in India.
What I see is a melting pot right here. I saw people from different countries, religions, and colors. When I say that, I literally mean skin color. but you know, it's beautiful to see this. It just looks like a garland of flowers from different variety, you know.
Since Holi is celebrated on a lunar calendar, the date can land anywhere in February or March. Emergency medical services are a vital part of our healthcare system. And now, a new facility will ensure Boston EMS has everything they need to save lives.
Last weekend, the ribbon was officially cut to open the doors of the newly renovated EMS training facility in West Roxbury. And 12 EMS cadets were recognized for completing the Boston EMS Cadet Program, the first cohort to do so in decades. They're part of the first recruitment academy class at the new training facility.
Being an EMT or being an EMS is a skilled profession. It requires a lot of skill and it requires a lot of attention to detail. And so having the new facility really enables our wonderful training staff to be able to focus on those details and not have to worry about other things. You know, we have space and tools and time now.
The cadet program is one of the many ways Boston EMS is actively recruiting to address the shortage of EMTs. Over the last 9 months, Boston EMS has successfully hired more than 90 members to join its team of now 428 uniformed personnel.
The reality is the single most important trait for being an effective, valuable emergency medical technician, or frankly anybody working with Boston EMS, is the desire to want to help their fellow man. It's the desire to want to do good, to help people who may be facing the absolute worst day of their life. Sometimes it's just holding a hand, and other times it's actually saving a life. But the reality is, if people go in with the desire to help their neighbors, their community, this training facility is going to give them the tools to do it the best possible way.
The 2-bay ambulance station at 201 Rivermore Street offers many amenities, including field simulation and advanced skills labs, a training bay, large multimedia classrooms, a gym, and administrative space.
But this isn't about the building. You know, this is about what it symbolizes, and it symbolizes our commitment to our workforce, to our personnel. It symbolizes our desire to really strengthen professional development, to make people feel like they can truly build careers within our city, within Boston EMS. This can be your life. This is about retention. This is about training. This is about all the things we want to do in terms of diversity, equity, and inclusion.
This new facility will make a huge difference in our training and how we train, what we're able to accomplish, and how many people we're able to reach. As of right now, we have a cadet program, we have a recruit process, and we also do regular routine training for our membership. So with this innovate, with the space, it's allowing us to keep our high fidelity mannequins, use them more often, more appropriately, and then just have more access. Whereas before, it was a task to unpack them, find a location, set up, break down, and that sort of thing. And we're finding now that with the younger learners, hands-on. So simulation is where it's at.
In a high-intensity field like emergency medical services, cadets are learning how to keep cool during stressful situations. The new EMS headquarters will ensure that the next generation of EMTs will have all the training they'll need.
EMS is a unique service in the fact that we are basically in there with only our wits and the equipment that we carry into the call. We have to do everything that we can possibly do as quickly as we can, because in life-saving situations, minutes matter, seconds matter. So the fact of the matter is that we train for speed and accuracy.
And a big message that we have here is that you got to remember that this person's emergency is not your emergency. So making sure that you can be there for them and support them, but that you're going to get the job done, that you're going to stay focused, you know, when things are getting hot, and just be able to be that person to get the job done.
Those interested in a career with Boston EMS can visit boston.gov/EMS to learn more and sign up for training and employment notices. Boston EMS plans to hire EMTs and cadets again this summer. Gentrification is an issue that many cities across the U.S. are facing right now. But Mayor Michelle Wu is determined to put power back into the hands of residents.
On Tuesday in the West End, Mayor Michelle Wu signed an ordinance to create a planning department under the City of Boston, the first one in 70 years. This move will allow city councilors to keep a closer eye on building projects that affect residents while incorporating community input.
Our neighborhood was not getting fairly represented in the past. We needed accountability. Outside agencies were not accountable to us. So moving this to the city is exactly what a neighborhood like the West End needs. They respect the West End. We respect the government. It's a much better situation. I hope this will be the end of outside agencies dictating the lives of a local community.
But I really believe that this is the most fundamental way that we're going to get it right in terms of how Boston grows. We have to have community members at the table at the beginning setting the rules for growth, and not at the end when every project comes and then it's a small fight and everybody's at meetings nonstop and you never know what's going to result from a project.
The mayor's vision for the new department starts with the Home Rule petition to end urban renewal, which has produced skyscrapers and mega complexes in many Boston neighborhoods. Other priorities include more attention to climate resilience, affordability, zoning reform, and equity in construction of new buildings.
This ordinance, bringing in planning as a core function of city government, is the first step of many to dismantle the archaic system that caused these harms to so many families. Mid-century land use tools and the regulatory structure that upholds them are simply outdated and do not work to adequately address issues affecting us today or that could tomorrow. Moreover, it is a system that was inherently designed to limit the input of community and uphold the status quo. From this ordinance, we can truly say that planning will dictate development and that the community has a greater say in holding all of us accountable.
With this planning department, instead of a kind of separate agency, you're going to have planning happening in community, in our neighborhoods, with the elected officials, you know, the mayor, the city councilors, who are accountable to the public. And you're really going to have these, like, transparent dialogues about community planning and how we grow. And it's not going to be just some separate agency anymore. And so I think that's really, you know, some people want to hide from accountability. The mayor's all about how do we, like, own these decisions and make them together and talk about the trade-offs in community. And really the goal is that something like what happened to the West End with the clearance never happens again.
The change will bring over staff from the current Boston Planning and Development Agency, BPDA, to the city's planning department. Previously, BPDA operated independently from the city.
We are building a 21st century planning department that can tackle Boston's greatest challenges and plan a city that's more resilient, affordable, and equitable. Having a planning department as part of the city will ensure that we're speaking to residents with one voice as the city, and it will allow us to make a clean break from the past and rebuild trust with community members that want to have a say in the way that their neighborhoods grow.
The mayor's office says the planning department will be part of the proposed 2025 fiscal year budget and will be active starting July 1st this year.
Corey McCarthy has a long history of working with urban youth. In his quest to change the societal narrative around underserved, underrepresented students and special populations, McCarthy has spent over a decade coaching and instructing young men and women to not simply utilize their athletic and academic abilities, but to ensure four-year college placement and graduation. Currently, he serves as the chief of student support in Boston Public Schools. McCarthy joined us in studio to talk about his passion for working with youth and the current initiatives his office is undertaking to support BPS students. Here's our conversation.
I'd love for you to start by telling us more about your role as Chief of Student Support for BPS. What does the job entail?
Well, I would say that our job is the bubble wrap for our kids, right? Like, we're making sure that they have a lot of stability. We are focused on removing barriers. We are looking at the conditions upon which they go to school. I think oftentimes before our students learn anything, we have to set the table for them to feel important, feel valued, have the essential things that they need, and then like be in an environment that really addresses their curiosity. So when you're thinking about student support, you're thinking about all the things that can make our students be successful while combining that with the things that they 100% deserve. Mm. You know, oftentimes in this world, when you work with the demographics of students that we have a hard time convincing them that they deserve more, convincing people that they deserve more, our kids deserve more, and they deserve like everything, right? So in student support, we have multiple departments. We have, and shout out to every one of you guys, I'm not gonna miss any of you all, but like we have our Department of Social Work, our opportunity youth. We have folks who are in charge of attendance, supervisors of attendance. We have athletics, the athletics department, which does, you know, also does an amazing job. We have counseling intervention center. Hmm. We have multiple team members who are committed to serving our students who are court involved or with DYS. We have additional folks who are supporting health services. So we have the health services department as well. And then we have some subsidiary departments that really make sure the students could elevate themselves. So we have some programming. We have multiple partnerships that are critical, like high-level partnerships that we feel create the total school experience for kids. You know, the long-term plan is to have maintain this, so we have a plan for kids so they have a birth through career experience.
And you're also part of the executive team under Superintendent Mary Skipper. Can you talk a little bit about what it's been like to work with this new superintendent, and what are some of your priorities at the moment?
Mary Skipper is so cool, right? I think what Mary brings to the table is that she's Boston. You know, if anybody knows Boston, Boston loves Boston, right?
Yes,
Boston loves a good mirror, and she's Boston. So by being Boston, you have to understand the unique dynamics that come with Boston. I think what makes Mary unique and special about in her role right now is that she's been a school leader. And being a school leader, being a successful school leader, it gives you a certain kind of capital. And that empathy and, you know, leaning into kids and wanting to know them a little bit deeper in multiple levels and layers. She communicates that in the way she talks to our children. You don't know anything about an educator until you see them interact with the very kids they serve, whether they're on their highest level or their lowest level. So in watching Mary, a lot of us could really learn from how she's able to connect with our kids. And that is seen in the work that she has allowed many of us to do. She's increased the capacity in many of the departments that are student related, and that's a very loud message that our kids are supported by the BPS.
Hmm. You just mentioned, you talked about like the many layers of students, and I can't even imagine being a young person in the school system today.
I feel like
they deal with so much. What are some of the most common challenges that you see our young people facing within BPS, and how would you say that your methods have changed over time to help the underrepresented and underserved students of the city?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's hard being a young person. Right now, it is. And it's hard being a middle schooler, right? Like, you can't get a job. You know, you're a little bit, people might think you're annoying because you're trying to figure your body out, right? The confidence isn't always there. You're not reflected in all the things that in your world, right? You don't really see a lot of people who look like you doing well, right? Because doing well and being well off is often affiliated with being an adult. It's hard to exist and really develop a sense of personal agency. You know, if I am a 12, 13, 14 year old right now, you know, where can I go besides school where I can learn about me and develop me? And find people who have the grace and the humanity to really help me develop as a human before I become that learner, right? Students, and then, so like, if we're looking at that dynamic around the pieces that make up the student and the learner, you have to really look at how they perceive the world and what we are doing to help them recognize that the world belongs to them. There's no messaging that says that. But, and even as you get older, you know, the kids are seeing they've dealt with a lot of rejection. They've dealt with a lot of rules, right? And we can't be rule-centered anymore. We have to be culture-centered. And, you know, culture is greater than rules. You know, if everywhere a kid goes, they see a rule. They're faced with a rule. Take your hat off. Do this, blah, 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 blah. Hmm. But, like, if you know nothing about a kid until you know what they respect. So if you see a kid and a kid understands that you respect the, or you have the common, you understand the common courtesy of like removing a hat or like not swearing around you or something like that. That is cultural. They know what you respect, and they know what you're holding them accountable to. So that in itself makes it hard to be a kid, but at the same time, they're all so brilliant. Our kids are geniuses. So like they make it happen, and quite frankly, they don't get enough credit. So to the second part of your question, you know, what are we doing to sort of like help them feel like they're loved and appreciated? You know, what I love about student support, I have an amazing team, and we constantly make sure, no matter what department, in any way, there's a very loud message that says to students all the time, are you good? Are you okay? What can we do? Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think that I don't know how often our kids hear that. And that's not knocking anybody else, but like, if you all are watching this and you talk to a kid, ask them how many times somebody asked those one of those three questions to them. I think it's important. And then what you want to do in life. Everyone, when a kid is in elementary school, they're constantly asking a kid what they want to do in life. Mm. Oh, well, what do you want to do, little Johnny? Well, I want to be a lawyer. I want to be a doctor. By the time it gets to seventh grade, it's sort of like, you don't know what you're going to do. Or like, I'm not even asking you. I need you to like sit down or be compliant. That's just not how it works. So we listen to them. So we talk to the kids. We listen to them. And in student support, you know, we take the things that kids are good at and we either help them turn it into a business, a lifestyle, a career, or an opportunity. Mm. So if you kids are into comic books, we did a Comic-Con event where we tied in some literacy to it, right? Because there's some phonemic awareness in visual literacy, right? While also reading. So, and then you're looking at like, kids want to own, they don't want to work for anybody. It's the millennial, right? Like, you know, they want to Gen Z or whatever you want to call it, but they want to own their own. Mm-hmm. And we've come across some amazing kids with some amazing ideas. So we did entrepreneurship. We do some work with the Office of Black Male Advancement in the mayor's office, and we're looking at what it is the state of existence of a black boy and what are we providing for black boys and black and brown boys and black and brown girls? What kind of things can we do? So we've stepped it up in athletics. We've provided some weekend enrichment, some after-school services, multiple initiatives. You know, we have the HBCU tour coming up. I'll probably be on the HBCU tour when you guys see me here. But, like, that's massive. We have, and people think and say there's a stereotype or this messaging that our kids don't want to do more for themselves. It's insane. We put out the flyer for the HBCU tour. We have 283 kids.
Wow.
In 48 hours. Mm. Kids want to do things, but nothing drives change but faster and more efficient than people. We have to continue to make sure that the mindset around student development, student growth, student advancement is centered around the mindset of the adult who is sort of like pushing the messaging along and coaching the kid through the process. So we've stepped it up to the table and really, really identified the things that the kids want, college tours, all that stuff. We created our own platform to help kids get to college after school. So we said to the school counselors, they need help. So we'll help you with a scholarship. We'll help you apply to college after school. We'll help you fill out your FAFSA. We'll help you do all these things and more. We'll host it on a Saturday. We'll come to you. We'll go into school. That's the way we are supposed to. When you start with such a gap, when you're born into such a gap, you have to have your needs met with innovative, over-the-top, high-level support.
That's great. I'm really hearing a by any means necessary approach.
Whatever it takes, yep.
I love that. Recognizing and seeing the brilliance of our young people. And speaking about your team, you have some exciting things that are on the horizon or that you're actively doing right now. You have a campaign to fight chronic absenteeism in 10 schools. Can you share more about the vision of this plan?
100%. So chronic absenteeism across the board, whether it's parochial school, charter schools, public schools. Since the pandemic, kids aren't returning at the rate that we all want them to come back. We decided that we needed to sort of like kickstart and really like dive into the innovation, dive into the intensive support, dive into the targeted support, dive into the family, right? The kid, the mind, and say like, why aren't you coming? But like, there's an algorithm as to why they're not coming. I mean, during the pandemic, if I could work and bring in $1,600 every 2 weeks into my house, why am I, and I'm 18 years old and I got a limited amount of credits, why am I coming back? I can make money. If I'm a student and I feel like I don't belong in a situation and belong in a school or the conditions at the school aren't great for me, why am I coming back? Hmm. If I'm a student that I have some beef in the neighborhood and you know, I'm trying to avoid Forest Hills. I'm trying to avoid Ashmont. I'm staying home. And, you know, compounded with parents who want their kids to feel safe. Like, student safety goes well beyond the school. The parents are paranoid about the safety of their children. And, you know, for me, school is the safest place. So, like, we're looking we decided, let's look at Region 8. We have 10 high schools, unique high schools, and we're saying to to your point earlier, we're saying to the schools and the university and the community, all of us could really bubble wrap around these kids, figure out why they're not coming at the rate we would like them to, figure out what is the root cause as to what why they're not coming, remove the barriers, and expand the ideology of what school is to our children and say, hey, school isn't just the hours you're here. You could be a learner from the time from eyes open to eyes shut. So can we have some pods at a BPL where kids are getting tutoring? Can we do some credit recovery at a library? Can we do some exploratory at a local college or university? Can we get you rides to school? Can we provide incentives? Can we have intramural programming? Can we turn around and help you with food insecurity? Can we support you in your mental health, which is a huge part of our division and student support? And can we put that sort of equation together and say to you, all right, you come to school, all the pieces will matter for you. All the pieces will come together for you. And then we will, hopefully, you will feel like all your needs could be addressed there. Your learning needs, your personal needs, your environmental needs. And this campaign, we have, you know, local politicians involved. We have local partnerships, nonprofits, community-based organizations. We have the faith-based community involved. We have signs. We're doing marketing. You know, we have shirts. If you want one, I should have dropped you guys off. You have to have a show with one of our Win the Day shirts on. So, and the campaign is called Win the Day. We're competitive, and we believe that every student, every day a student comes to school is a win. And because they're blessing us. They're coming to school. They make our lives better. So, like, it's a win for them to be here, but it's also a win for us to be in their presence. So, like, this sort of Win the Day campaign is unique, stacked with like home visits and some really strong messaging. So we're super happy about that. It's a 50 school day campaign.
Wow.
And we hope that it could unearth some, a lot of like and add to the larger research as to how the city, not just Region 8, the city in the fall, hopefully they'll be launching a larger one.
That's beautiful. I love this multifaceted approach that you have going. And what advice do you have for parents and family members to help support the success of our young people today?
Well, the advice I would give to them is to ask more questions and be loud about it. It's just what it is. I know it's not a great thing to, it's not perceived by many to be an amazing thing for parents to be loud, but be loud about what you want for your kids. Being loud means you want to be involved, right? So, all right. So, ask the right questions. Let's get involved. Let's work together, and we can make it happen for your student. And ask multiple questions, right? Call every number. You know, I use my personal phone. Every kid in the district has access to my number. You could call us because I think that the idea that school finishes when the bell rings at the end of the day is no longer. We're not in those times anymore. The extension of school is the community. And, you know, we're deep into the community in terms of like trying to support our kids and our families. So
thanks for tuning in, Boston. That's our broadcast. For BNN News, I'm Faith Amaphidon, and I'll see you next week.